looking for something. A new way, a new understanding, a connection, some comfort. You've got questions, and Light on Living puts the spotlight on all the answers so you can shine. Lift and lighten the load of life's challenges and learn simple and easy ways to live a healthy, happy life. You'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you. You're invited to hear new, see different, and feel more as Lisa shines the light on living.
So, hello everyone. Welcome to Light on Living. I'm your host, Lisa Berry. And why are we here? We are here to give you reasons just to feel better. And that's with every aspect of your life. It doesn't matter what you're thinking about and worrying about or wanting to do or excited about. I just want to be able to bring you people that can just show you a new perspective to say, yeah, I can feel a little bit better in this situation and have a little bit more hope and a little bit more joy. And so today, I have to say, everybody, you're going to hear it in my voice anyways. I'm a little giddy because it's so much fun interviewing people. But when you have history, and only one-sided history, actually, with the guest, it is just so much fun. This is somebody I learned. It's so funny what you learn from people. I learned things from my guest 10 years ago, and he has no clue who I am or was or any of those things, but he really had an impact on me and along with his partner back then, his business partner then, and I learned from them, and I learned things that were so, you know, could seem so small, but they were so significant, and they changed the way I wrote my seminars, they changed the way I delivered speeches, and they changed the way I looked at other people when they were speaking and how my ears kind of perked up and recognized that, hey, that speaker really knows what they're doing. I like, you know, how they're delivering it. So I want to share with you, everybody, I have the most wonderful, the most experienced, the most amazing Lee Pound with me here today. He is an editor, book publisher, and seminar producer. And so everybody right now, yes, I want you to write your book and all those things, but there is something that I'm going to ask Lee right away as I welcome him. And what it is that right now, you, if you're listening and you know you have a book in you, you want to write the book, but you haven't written the book. This is your show. You've got to get on let everybody know to listen to this show. Come on, jump online, and you've got to hear from Lee Pound. So welcome, Lee. Hello.
Well, hello, Lisa. It's a real pleasure to be on here today.
I've had the build-up going on here.
I know. I keep listening. Oh. Wow, did I do all that?
Yes. You know what? You have done so much. And you know what I love about that, too, is that we don't know who we affect and who we inspire. And it could be across the world. You know, who knows where you were 10 years ago, but there I was in, you know, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, listening to you guys, you and RV Robinson, and just excited. And you guys had so much fun with everything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. If you can't have fun, why do it?
Yes, exactly. There you go. Now, there was, you know, there's a word, a term that I caught on your website, and I thought, I've got to ask about this question too. The word was something about how to have resounding success. And that jumped out at me because it just sounded fun, first of all, but like heart fun. And when we're thinking about a book and we want to write a book or get a book out there, sometimes people can, you know, get overwhelmed by that and a little bit afraid. But I like the word resounding success because it made it sound like I want that. What does that mean to you when it comes to a book, having resounding success?
Well, it means both actually selling a lot of them, but it really means affecting people's lives. And creating something that people will want to read, that they'll want to learn from, that they'll want to pull pieces out, pull nuggets out and live from. And to me, hearing from you and how much I affected you, even though I didn't know I was doing it, that's a resounding success to me.
Oh.
It's incredible because the people you help go on to help others.
Yes.
And they make a difference in the world and you help make it. And that is so much more successful than just making a huge amount of money.
Yes, I'm glad you said that, actually. And now, how long is your career? You started quite a few decades ago.
Quite a few. too long. I think I've been actually speaking on stages for 50 years.
Oh, wow.
First one was 1974.
Oh, my sister might hate me, but that's her birth year. So that's, I know how long really? That feels. Now, wow. And you have such an interesting start because you started as a speaker. And then I love, could you share your story of how you even entered into this whole thing of writing?
Mm-hmm. Well, the speaking and writing kind of came together, but the writing part, I was always, even as a kid, writing stuff down. I didn't write anything in particular, but I always was pretty good at it. And I got into the newspaper business, but I started in high school, believe it or not, as a school photographer in a little bitty school here in Orange County, California. There aren't any little bitty schools here anymore, but there was then. And I went on to help start a new weekly newspaper in Placentia, California, and I was the editor. I gathered all the news, wrote it, edited it, wrote all the headlines. So I was into writing very early. Mm-hmm. And I did the newspaper business 15 years. And we had a lot of good publications in North Orange County. But it just gave me that feel for writing that I found I loved it. Mm-hmm. And I loved doing it, and I loved putting the words down and helping people know what's going on in their world. So that was my writing beginning. And the speaking beginning was, you know, most people think, gee, I want to be a speaker, and they try to get on a stage and they work at it and all this sort of thing. And my speaking career began. And again, you have to listen, you have to watch, and you have to put things out there. I was actually a family historian too, genealogist. Oh. And I loved looking up families. My mother was German, half German, and we couldn't find a thing about them.
No.
So in 1974, I went to Germany, and believe it or not, it was an odd name, unusual name, but believe it or not, I found them and tracked them all the way back into the 1600s. Went back to my society. When I got back, said, gee, I did this. It was really wonderful. I wasn't thinking about speaking. Wasn't thinking about anything like that. And they said, oh, how would you like to give a presentation to our society? Because nobody knows how to do this, and you just did it.
Right.
And so my very first speech I ever gave, aside from 30 seconds on the high school stage running for student body treasurer, very first speech was an hour long in front of 150 people.
Oh, wow.
And the next day I got a phone call from somebody in the audience who said, gee, I loved your speech. Would you come speak to our group? Mm-hmm. And that set off 20 years of speaking to societies, clubs, organizations, conferences on this subject, from U.S. to German to all sorts of family history.
On family history, on a topic you would never know. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Didn't expect, but I just got fascinated because I wanted to know. And there I was. I did that from the 70s into the 90s.
So something you followed a passion for.
It trained me. Oh, yeah. I still do it. I still have huge databases and all that sort of stuff. So I could do an hour and a half on that, but that's not what we're doing here. But the point being, those speeches to 10 or 15 or 20 people or 50 or 100, a couple of the conferences, one of them I went to, I did one speech, and then they said somebody didn't show up or a couple of people didn't show up. Can you do another one and another one and another one? And I think I did 4-hour-long speeches in one day with no preparation.
Oh, wow.
And they loved it. So now, it trained me to be able to get on stage and do that.
You know, in getting on stage is that you want to affect those people, like what you mentioned. I want to bring back on something you said about gathering headlines for the newspaper. When you were getting up to do those speeches, did you really take your time at least into preparing the title of the talk or the headline? And how much of the story should we squeeze into a headline?
A lot. A lot, really. Because the story is the emotion. The story is what grabs people. So when you write a headline, and I wrote I won't even want to guess how many thousands of them for the newspapers over the years. But it's the same as a headline for a marketing piece, for a radio show, for anything that you're doing. You got to touch the emotion to bring them in. And that's the story. So anything, any speech that I did, any presentation, like that first one that was so successful, I just told the story of what I did. It wasn't that I gave them a lot of dry facts and figures or anything. Mm-hmm. I said, here's this thing. I drove into this little town in Germany. I thought they were somewhere up and down here. And guess what? When I pulled in and parked in the parking lot across from this big, beautiful church and got this little hotel right across a very narrow street, that turns out to be the very church that my ancestors worshipped in for over 200 years.
Oh, that is, I can picture it. I think, and the details that you offer. Yes. Yeah. The visual, I'm feeling it, like I'm picturing
people.
I'm picturing myself there. Yeah.
Yeah, you should feel the emotion. I do when I just tell it.
Yeah.
If you can feel the emotion when you're telling it, the audience is feeling it.
That's a really good way to measure that. I like that. Because if you're not present or you're not into the story or you're just trying to memorize something, you're right. It's not going to have the same, you're not coming from that same place.
Exactly. It can't. That's one reason I never memorize a speech.
Oh.
I know what
that's
I have
interesting.
To say. I have an outline. Most of those genealogy talks were an hour long. I might have a note with 10 items listed just to remind me to talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, when you're loose and you're really paying attention to the audience, the words will flow. Mm-hmm. I remember doing one speech where, and this is something you can do, by the way, there were like 20 people in the audience. And they said some of them may have some things they want to hear about specifically. So would you mind if we ask them to give you five or six topics that you might want to expand on? I said, no, fine. And I think I got a list of about 8 of them. These were just things people threw out. Can you talk about this? What's about this? What about that? And I just wove them right into the speech because I didn't have a prepared word-for-word speech.
I
just
that.
Knew what I was going to talk about, and I could look at that list in front of me, and I could think quickly, this is a perfect spot to cover this one.
Right.
And then just go do it. But you got to know your stuff.
Yes.
Obviously.
Now, how does that work? Yeah. Did you ever turn those talks into a book? Did you use have you ever used content that you had during a speech and then turned it into a book?
A lot of the content and books that I've done has also appeared in speeches. I haven't consciously done that, but you could.
Okay.
And in fact, if you record the speech and you get somebody to transcribe it, it takes some work. You'll have to replace about 90% of the words. But you can come up with at least an article or something out of it.
Mm, yes.
The stuff you come up with when you're speaking is your most important stuff. It's your best material because you wouldn't talk about it otherwise.
Right. I love that you just said that part right there. You would, otherwise you wouldn't talk about it. So when somebody, so I'm imagining somebody walking around right now and they're telling a story. They're speaking, maybe it's not on stage, but they're telling their friends, they're telling coworkers, they're telling people they're coaching. So that's their speech. And so is that the book inside them, maybe?
It's a good part of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If they care enough about that story to talk about it, there's something underneath there that's important to them. Mm-hmm. If it's important to the person who's writing the book, they'll write a better book. And there will be an audience out there for it. Because if it's important to you, it's important to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And the key is the other person doesn't know how you solved it.
Right.
And this way, you can share how you solved it. You can put it in an article, book, ebook, any type of writing you want. and it'll come out and it'll change somebody's life.
Yes. You know, I like that you said article book. I'm familiar with, you know, anthologies and compilations, and I've done interview series on them, but article book, that's fun. What is that?
Well, to me, you have to be careful with them.
Okay.
Yes, it can work, but if you don't have any kind of real theme in it, you're going to start losing your reader because it'll be very spotty. It'll be going one direction at one point and then another direction at another and maybe a third direction and maybe it turns around and comes back again. And so I've always said that, yeah, anthologies you can be in or you can write. But if you're in one with other authors, essentially you're sharing the spotlight with 30 other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's not as productive as sharing the spotlight with yourself and having your own book. That's where the power is. You can get started that way, but the key is learn the writing craft, learn the writing skills so that you can actually affect people emotionally. And there's a number of them, and it's very, very important that people know them before they put that book out there, or they're just going to kill their audience.
Yes. I love that you said that. It's a great way to start. So if somebody is there, they're talking about their story, they're sharing it, but they haven't yet even, you know, attempted to write, that is possibly a good place to start is the anthology, but would you be, like when we come back after commercial, would you be able to share a few of the skills that we need to learn?
Absolutely.
Okay. And I have a big, like, I have to let the audience know this. You shared a story. It's a very personal story for you, and I'm going to ask if you would share it when we come back about a very special, close woman to you who you knew she had a book in her. She knew she had a book in her, and she almost didn't, you know, attempt to do this. But I'm going to have you fill in the blanks in the story and how, you know, and how writing a book can really change your life.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
Okay. Well, everybody, you're listening to Light on Living. We're here with Lee Pound, just everything, a writer, an editor, a book publisher, and come on back to find out how you too can write your book.
Best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
We have all read about or heard about becoming more spiritual, about working with our energy, the awakening, the shift, about being our authentic selves, living our purpose, reaching our true potential. The challenge doesn't lie in the knowledge, it lies in the execution. The struggle becomes connecting to that limitless self-healing part that each one of us has and gaining control of who we truly are. Hi, I'm Dr. Reverend Aisha Hogan, and you are invited to join me on a master's practice on Om Times. Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard and 11 a.m. Pacific Standard.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance. Say hi, guys. When I adopted them, I discovered that they both have incredible personalities. Chance's sole purpose in life is to love and to be loved. Frankie is a little bit of a scoundrel and always entertaining. They're a little bit of a lot of things, but they're all pure love. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
Oh, Oh, welcome back, you guys. You're listening to Light on Living. I'm your host, Lisa Berry, and I'm really just so happy to be here with Lee Pound as he shares, he's going to be sharing quite a few skills. I love to know this. What skills do we need to write a book? Because I know a lot of my listeners and previous guests actually have been in anthologies, I myself included. And you know what? I'm like, okay, how do I do it? How do I get to that book? The book that, as I love that you said, Lee, is where the power is. And first of all, I would love to ask you just to expand on that a little bit, because what is the more power between writing articles, anthology, and then stepping into your own book, be it fiction or nonfiction?
Okay. The first thing is, a book has a lot more depth. Most of the articles you see, four or five or six paragraphs, and you can't really do anything with four or five or six paragraphs. But a book gets you access to a reader for a longer period of time. They'll sit down and they'll read for 2 or 3 or 4 hours.
Right.
And you can do long form, which means you're going to more depth. You're telling them stories. You're creating an emotional impact around what you do. And the trick is learning how to do this. It's not just a bunch of words. Mm-hmm. And here's the first thing, and most people don't believe this, but it's absolutely true. They do not teach emotional writing skills in school.
Oh.
The thing that teachers teach is grammar.
Yes.
They teach how to put together a sentence that works, that flows, that is grammatically correct. Mm-hmm. The biggest problem is a lot of those sentences are absolutely boring people to death.
Right.
And I have, in fact, in my talks on writing, the first thing is there's only two kinds of writing. That's it. And you better not be doing one of them. So the first kind of writing is boring. Mm-hmm. The second kind is interesting. And the mm-hmm. keys to making it interesting are making it personal, making it emotional, telling stories, giving not just information, but how that information works. How people have used it to become incredibly great at what they do. When you do that, you're going to win. You're going to be a winner. And there's a lot of techniques that we use in order to do that.
Okay.
But the first one, let's get really to the start, to the heart of it.
Okay.
Lots of people want to write a book. Most of them never start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They think and think. Oh, gee, what's this? Can I do this? Gee, that sounds like a good thing. No, maybe I'll do something else. And they do this for years.
Yes.
Yeah, you've been there. Almost everybody has. So in our writing workshop, our first statement is stop thinking, start writing.
Oh, I love that.
Because mm-hmm. writing is thinking. Your real gut, deep level ideas, thoughts, and feelings come out when you write, not when you think.
Right.
And there's been so many times I've sat down and started writing something, and all of a sudden the floodgates open. And I can sit there for an hour, and it just, but I've trained myself to do this. But the key is, you've got to sit, plant yourself in front of the computer, and make it happen. And this is called accountability.
Mm-hmm.
So the keys to writing a good book are accountability, organization, and craft. Most people have no idea. If I ask almost anybody on the street, do you know a lot about writing craft? A lot of them would say, yeah, sure, I can write. I write letters all the time. They really don't know anything about writing craft. And most people don't, because it's not taught anywhere. You learn it at conferences. You learn it from books by some of the masters.
Right.
But most people have no idea what it means and how to do it.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking it just in my world. It's so funny, because as you're talking about this, and I think people, I've been thinking, you know, of my book, that it's already, it feels like it's written in my head, but now I've been thinking about it for so long that I don't think I can actually write it to the standard that it's been created in my mind. And it's exactly. Maybe it's because I'm missing the skills of the craft of how to write.
Well, here's the thing. First draft, and I'm going to do this for everybody out there who's listening. I give you absolute permission to write your first draft and make it very, very, very bad, because all first drafts are going to be that way.
Right.
You get something down, then you work on it. I mean, you don't make a sculpture from the very first moment. It's exactly perfect. No, you chip something off, and then you chip something else, and you smooth it, and you form it, and then you chip a little more, and you work through, and you make sure this is right and that's right. This is what writing's about. The work of writing is rewriting. People get scared of they put down that first page and look at it and say, oh my gosh, this is awful, I can't write, I'm going away and I'm forgetting about it.
Yeah.
But no, put it down, go to the next one, don't go back and think about it, don't go back and look at it, just get whatever, it's a chapter, an outline, whatever it is, get something on paper, because then you can tweak it, or better yet, on the computer.
Yes, a little easier on the hand joints. I wrote a quote that I read on your bio there. It said, if you never hear criticism, you're not risking enough.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. That is so true. That is so true. I worked years ago, I was in a small seminar with Saul Stein, who was the owner of Stein and Day Publishers. I worked with him for 4 years and wrote two novels with him. Oh. And one of the things that he said, and this really stayed with me, because I'm writing another book now about my late wife, and I am having to really dig and get down into the emotional, you know, swamps down there, where there are things I don't really want to think about. But he said, to be a really great writer, you have to dig down and understand the stuff that you don't ever want to talk about or think about, the horrible things, the things where the emotional impact was so powerful. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily put those in your book, but you use the feeling in your book. Because only you can understand how that was. And the deeper you understand it, the more powerful the book gets.
Right. And that's interesting, because I often, you're right, I'm like, I'm not right. I want to write about a situation, say, but I'm like, I don't want to relive it or go through it or maybe share it. But I see what you're saying. You tap into it, and then you express it differently. Like, you express it...
Well, maybe you're writing a nonfiction book, but you're talking about some particular process that requires deep work and that sort of thing. Well, go back and find an experience where you now understand what the deep emotional work was. And then you can go back. Or the plowing through it and making the mistakes and reworking, whatever it was. You know, I'm sure Bill Gates didn't write DOS the first time he sat down.
Right.
It didn't work probably at all the first time.
Right, like the light bulb. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody did that. Think about any of the big bestsellers. There's a number of them, particularly memoirs, since what I'm writing right now is a memoir of, you know, my wife and her illness.
Right.
But I have to really do some digging. Because you don't want to go relive those emotions. But that's what the reader wants. They want to know how you felt, how you experienced it, and how they can get through the same type of thing.
Yeah.
That's why they're reading your book.
When you have workshops, you offer workshops. Does a workshop help people write, or does a workshop help people dig to those deeper parts? Or both?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let me. I'll go into what we figured out. Obviously, we figured out that people aren't going to write if you just send them home and say, right. That's what we tried the first time out. In fact, my late wife took one of those early courses. She actually did write her ebook and got it out. But we were finding that people went home and they didn't write. And we even did some online programs where, yeah, they'd write a little bit there, but then they go home and they don't do anything. Mm-hmm. And we put together this whole big online program. It was like 18 hours of training to write your first draft.
Oh, my gosh.
But
wow.
We looked at it and we said, what's the most important part of this whole process? And that's putting the darned words on paper or into your computer one at a time. And we also said, if I asked you to write 50 pages and come back next week with your 50 pages, how many people would actually do that? It'd scare them to death. Mm-hmm. They'd say, oh my gosh, I can't write one page. How can I write 50?
Yeah.
And we discovered that if you give people a short period of time to write, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, they'll sit there and do it.
Oh, my gosh.
They will sit there and do it. And that was the key.
Oh,
that
my gosh.
The
like 5 minutes.
Key. Yeah. 5 minutes. And here, so we came up with, finally, the live four-day boot camp. I'd resisted that for so long. I just didn't want to do it. You have to be there for 4 days.
Yeah.
But I looked at our online training, and it was 18 hours. I figured, wait a minute. You did 6 or 5 or whatever hours each day. You could, and you write a first draft in that 18 hours. You could do a first draft in 4 days.
That's actually incredible.
And
I like
so
that.
We literally did that. We set up a four-day workshop, said, come in, bring your computer, no notes, you don't need notes.
Oh.
Don't need a subject, don't need an organization, don't need an outline, don't even need an audience. Just come and, you know, most people have some idea what they want to do, but
yeah,
just come, bring your computer, sit down and do what we tell you.
How many times have you run that one?
What was that?
How many times have you run the four-day workshop like that?
Oh, we've been doing it for about a year now.
Okay.
We've probably done it 10 of them.
Okay. And
person who walked in the door on Monday, everyone, whether they hated writing or not, walked out the door with a first draft on Thursday.
Oh, my goodness. Every one of them? I'm impressed.
Every single one. And not only did they do that, they sat there and they worked. But they did it 5 minutes at a time. They learned storytelling. They learned craft. They organized their book. They actually built a whole organization. They actually got to know their audience, who's the reader.
Mm.
All of it in 4 days. And we're still sitting there scratching our heads. How did this work? But it does.
It does. Could you share that? Because there is about your wife who you said, you know, we've said that. But when I heard about the fear that she was experiencing, like, what if I don't write this book? I mean, that exists in people who want to write. And that's a biggie. That will turn into a regret. And we know how people feel about regrets when they're on their deathbed. That's like the worst thing. So.
Exactly. Well, she had a lot of things going for her. She was a marriage family therapist. She was a very, very good family counselor, but she was also a very good executive and business coach and consultant. And so, and she had a very strong background. She grew up in Yuma, Arizona, and learned Spanish at the age of 6 and spoke it fluently. So she was a real expert on helping Hispanic workers and Anglo bosses in the workplace understand each other and did huge trainings on it. But she always wanted to write a book about that and show how it works so more people could learn how to do it. And she could never quite get started. And she had a book coach in the room.
Yes.
Yes. So finally, when we first started the workshop, and this was one of the live ones where you come in and you write and you go home and write. And she actually did some writing. But she went through that workshop early on, and this was July, August of 2013. Yeah, 2013. And actually wrote her book. It was a published book and a print book and an e-book, still on Amazon, and got it done. Got it done right around the end of that year. And this is just, it won't necessarily happen to everybody, but she got that book done. And in January of the following year, she started having back pains, which turned out to be pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
And she lived two more years, but they were not productive years. She had to stop working, I think, by July of that year. And if she hadn't got that book out, her message would still be inside her.
Yes.
But she got that book out. It's out there. If you want to know how to manage an Hispanic workforce, it's out on Amazon, and anybody can
yes.
get it. And her legacy has been left, and it has helped other people. And that, beyond anything else, is what a book will do for anybody out there who's has a legacy, who has a process. Get it out, get it on paper, get it published so others can learn from you, even if you're no longer here.
That story really affected me deeply. I never thought, because, you know, in my own world, I'm thinking, I should, and maybe, it, you know, that'd be a shame if I didn't. But when I heard that, and I went, oh my gosh, that whatever I'm thinking of writing would be, I love what you said, locked inside of me. And mm-hmm. oh my gosh, that created a little like a fear, like, oh my gosh, no, my fear now, I am more afraid of not writing it than writing it. And I love these legacy. So legacy, process, and what would you consider nonfiction, or sorry, fiction, like your creative story, I guess.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I've had a lot of experience with fiction. The first things I did were novels. I actually
yes.
wrote three of them, two of them, while I was working with Saul Stein.
Oh, wow.
Fiction is one of the key ways that we show society how it really should be and
oh.
what it's really doing.
Oh.
Because it's a story. We can get deep, and we can get into individuals. We can go into their thoughts, their feelings, how they're reacting. And it's pure emotion. And I've actually had two people who wrote, I won't go into their names because it was ghostwriting, but and the subjects, but they had a very didactic process with their first book, and it was about the subject, but it was just telling people about it.
And on that note, because we're going to have to sneak, they're going to cut me into commercial, but that is a great place to leave. So when we come back, everybody, if you are thinking about writing fiction, this is the part you want to come back to.
Yes.
The best of holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Mind connected to the heart, connected to the love, connected to the soul. I'm connected to you. the perfect way to get to know your partner, yourself, and love more deeply. Download and join today.
Minds connected to the heart, connected to the love, connected to the soul. I'm connected to you, connected to me.
For those times when you're looking for insight and additional tools to living your most elevated life, there's no better place to turn than Intuitive Alchemy Radio. Join me, Laura Brown, each Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern for inspiring conversations, live on-the-air readings, and tools to help you build your most aligned, most abundant, and most delicious life.
Mother Ocean. Hi, I'm Jimmy Buffett. West Indian manatees are one of the most unique animals on Earth, and we're still finding out so many new things about them. But manatees are endangered, and many of them are killed or injured each year because of watercraft collisions or other human activities. You can help save these gentle marine mammals. For free tips on what you can do, call Save the Manatee Club at 1-800-432-JOIN. Thank you.
Just so glad that you guys are all here listening to my guest Lee Pound and myself Lisa Berry here on Light on Living, because this is really helping people who have not yet written or have written a little bit, or they want to continue writing and really take it to different places. And Lee, I love that you said about novels being, that really actually struck me, about a novel is kind of about the way the world should be and what it's doing and what's going on. And that is, that's so sad. That really explained that to me so quickly and easily. And you exactly. Yourself being a novel. Yeah. I want to touch on a little bit later. I want to make sure I ask about, because you are a book publisher. I mean, you publish books as well. And I would love for you to be able to share with anybody who's considering writing what that looks like first of all, the difference between self-publishing, getting published with, you know, a publishing company, and how that helps or doesn't help, or what that can do to help boost it all. You know everything, so.
Yeah, there's a lot of good topics in here. And, I know that there's kind of a spiritual tone and so forth on some of the stuff on the station. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. One of the things that I have found, of course, I mentioned my wife. We had an incredibly profound spiritual experience right at the end.
Oh.
I mean, amazing. And that is what my book is about, and how that experience shaped me. But the key is, I'm not just telling what happened, which happens in a nonfiction book too often. What I'm doing in there is reliving it with you, the reader. In other words, you're seeing my experiences, my thoughts, the things that came up as we went through this process. And it's incredibly deep, and it's incredibly spiritual, but it's also incredibly emotional. And I use very strong fictional techniques in writing this, because even though it's nonfiction, if you know how to write fiction, you can write nonfiction in a way that is so powerful that it grabs the reader and draws them through. They can't put the book down. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of these technical things, and then the basic emotional things that you can do. Most people write surface. This happened, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened, because they don't want to go into any depth and even write their stories that way.
Yes.
But first, mostly, they don't do any dialogue. And that simply is people talking to each other. Right. But that's where characters developed. It's developed in the way people talk, the shortness or length of their words, you know, their expressions, all of that. And you have to learn how to do it because it's really important. And I took a 10-week course in dialogue from Saul Stein before I got into his group. 10 weeks on how to do it. But if you don't just, instead of saying, he told me he wanted to go home, say, he said, I want to go home, which is more immediate, which is clearer, which is right up front. And so that's one of the techniques we use, creating scenes, using description, using the, but using those things are technical, but where the emotion comes from is the depth of the feelings. And a lot of that is the interior dialogue and monologue as you go through things. What are you really feeling and thinking about what's going on? And you can do that with anything. I remember walking up on, I haven't put this in a book, but when Arvie and I were doing our first Speak Your Way to Wealth, we'd done a year and a half of planning and work. And I remember very early on having a vision of what that was going to look like. And we walked in there that first day. The crowd is out in the hallway. And we walked down the aisles and we looked around, got up on the stage before they came in. And I just realized right in that moment, this is exactly what my vision looked like 2 years ago.
Oh, I have goosebumps.
See the power of how that was?
Yeah.
That's using fictional techniques. Instead of just saying we walked in, hey, it looked like just what we thought it was going to.
Yeah.
Where does that leave you?
Right, without the goosebumps, and not the ones with.
Yeah, without the goosebumps. And without the desire to do it.
Yes.
If I was talking to people about how to do it, and I did that story, it would have an incredible effect.
Mm-hmm.
So we use stories in everything. Everything we do. Story is how people remember what happened in, you know, centuries and millennia ago.
Yeah.
They're the heart of what we are as people. And we have to use them to communicate deeply.
Mm.
And so in my speeches, everything, every time, there's always four or five stories, and some of them are very deep ones.
Mm-hmm.
And the most powerful ones I save for just before I do the final, whatever it is I want them to do, the final close.
Oh.
That one is a story about my dad and a Brahma bull. And it's an incredibly inspiring story. And people go out of there shaking and thinking, oh, my God.
Right, you've emotionally moved them. Actually, it's so funny. I remember the title of my seminar that I was about to deliver, and I had delivered it about maybe four times. This is 10 years ago, about four times before. And it was reasonable, you know, response. But basically, because I think I'm just like a caricature. I get up there and people just kind of giggle at me moving around fast. But when I took the number one tip I really grabbed and took from you guys back then was your opening, the thing that comes out of your mouth, the very first thing should be either a bold statement that you have to either shock them or need to prove, or, you know, like it was a bold thing. And I'll tell you, I remember that creating like such a vision, like a visual effect with my opening statement that I had everybody right from that second. And that was like the huge, mm-hmm. huge tip. And then right now, I love that you just shared, mm-hmm. like you end with a powerful story of to inspire them to do what you'd like them to do, write their book.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, this brings up what you mentioned at the beginning. This brings up one of the really key things that I learned from Saul. I think I knew it anyway, but not in so many words. And that is, there's a very effective way to keep readers reading, because people want to know things,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So you plant a question in their mind at the very beginning.
Yes.
And that question is what they want to know. And sometimes it's two or three or four questions. And one of the novels I did started with this simple line. For me, it began with a lie. How many questions are in that sentence? who's needy, what began, what was the lie, what was the effect, who's involved. It's almost like you can't hardly not read the next line.
Right.
And then the secret is, don't answer them right now.
That is so good. Before, yes.
Yeah. Before you answer them all, make sure that you planted some more. Because the reader keeps wanting to know. And you don't answer everything till the very end. Because once you've answered everything, the book's over.
Right. Oh, that's so brilliant. Oh, I can totally see how that would like flow now. You're like, you give them enough answers that they're like, okay, good. I have some, you know, closure on that question. But then what's now? There's more. It's like a soap opera.
Yeah. and when you're writing a novel, there's a structure. A lot of people will go into details about, you know, structure this, structure that. But there's a flow that happens. That happens from the opening problem through this attempt to resolve the situation, through the all of the setbacks that you go through till you finally discover the real solution. And that's a story flow, and there's a lot of ways to learn about story. There's some really good books out there that talk about it and show exactly how to do it. But the key is nonfiction books should also be written in story structure.
Yes.
Because of the same reason. You want people to understand what's going on. You want to begin with the question, with the problem you solve. What are the steps to solve the problem? Those are the things you go through. What are the pitfalls in each step? Mm-hmm. And it just goes on like that. And then you go to a resolution in the end. And then a call to action. You go out and do this too. Mm-hmm. That's the most powerful kind of book. A particularly nonfiction book, but fiction is where we really get the deep emotions.
Yeah.
And I think almost everybody should try to write at least short stories or a short novel in order to learn those techniques. But don't just do it on your own. Get help. Get Saul Stein has a great book on Stein on writing that shows you how to do it. There's several others that do the same thing. And once you understand it, you can write anything, any kind of book.
You're inspiring me to go back to how to write school here. But now you actually offer, you do offer the workshop, and I want to hear about the workshop in our last few minutes. But and then one quick question about, because I got a producer, a publisher here online. I want to be able to hear this one. So many people are afraid to write their book because there are just so many books out there. Does everybody still have a shot?
Everybody has a shot. It's a difficult process. I will not sugarcoat that. 99.98% of all things submitted to professional agents and to publishers gets rejected. And there's only one reason. It's not good enough. It doesn't do these things we've been talking about.
Okay.
So the key to really successful publishing is first writing a standout book, but you need help to do that. Secondly, finding a really good agent, but you have to write a book that meets that agent's taste, and you have to do it in a way, somehow you have to meet them. Personal contact tends to be best. There's a lot of ways to do it. I have one that came out of my years ago with Saul Stein, but there's all sorts of ways to do it. That's the inroad into commercial. Into self-publishing, you got to get out and market. You got to get out and speak. You have to put out tweets. You have to do all of the heavy-duty marketing in order to make it a success. And few people have done that, but they've worked hard at it. And the publishing game is about getting to as many people as possible who are interested in your subject and creating demand for what you have done. And it's a marketing problem. Yeah.
So that was beautifully said. That was actually so helpful right there, because I would love to invite people to your workshop. Is your workshop online or do they come to you?
It's both. First of all, the entry point is cslwritersworkshop.com. And CSL stands for Creativity, Success, Legacy. And on that, we have the online version at the very bottom, and we have the four-day workshops. We're doing one in Denver, actually beginning Wednesday, Thursday, we're doing it there. We're doing one in Orange County later in this month, and then we're doing another one in Denver in February, and we've got a number of them scheduled. There's a schedule on the site. They can go to the site. They can actually take about a one-hour sample lesson and see how it works.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So that's set up there. But, yeah, you go to the website, pick the date, show up. We do it in Orange County, California, and in Denver, Colorado right now.
Okay.
And 4 days.
Well, this sounds tremendous value, and I have to tell you, Lee, I flew down to Florida to the Hay House Writers Workshop, and actually, I was going down just to look for some wonderful authors for my show, and what I learned was that everybody there were 300 people. They said that everybody here has the right now. We will read your transcripts or your first draft, and we're guaranteed. Now that's like a huge shot, right? And you know what? And he said right there, he stood right there, and he said, less than a quarter of you will actually even write and send it in, even with this confirmed thing. So I know how difficult that writing is. And so I'm so excited for people to get a hold of you and to take this workshop or just even start, because I already know you helped them. So, oh my goodness, thank you so much for being able to come on here.
If you show up at the 4 day, we guarantee you will walk out with the first draft.
That's it. I love that. That's a beautiful guarantee. Lee Pound, everybody, thank you so much. This has just been like just so much fun. Thank you. Such a gift.
Thank you.
All right, Lee, we'll talk to you soon. And everybody, let's get your first draft done. We'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.